Welcome to LabCorp Perspectives Oncology, where we connect on cancer, science, and patient care. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Previs, and I'm the Senior Director of Medical Affairs at LabCorp. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Mark Sawson, who is the Head of Technology and Innovation here at LabCorp. On a personal note, Mark is one of the smartest people I know and a real leader in the molecular residual disease, or MRD, space. And I'm so grateful that you're here today with us, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's dive right in. Today, we're diving into a phase two trial that I know you know really well, and that explored perioperative immunotherapy in patients with resectable diffuse pleural mesothelioma, which, for those of you who don't know, this is a really rare, thankfully rare, and aggressive cancer with historically very limited treatment options. More recently, clinical trials have evaluated immune checkpoint blockade and fortunately have shown a lot of promise in patients with unresectable disease. But its role in the perioperative setting, really largely before a patient is taken to surgery, that remains still pretty undefined. So this trial is one of the first really to explore that space. And I'd love to dive into this more with you today, Mark. I know you were a big part of it, of which, you know, this trial not only tested immune checkpoint blockade in the perioperative setting for these patients, but also used a novel ctDNA platform to track residual disease.
Thank you. Excited to highlight this study and really what we were able to achieve, you know, on the therapeutic side from a proof of concept standpoint, but also with respect to some of the ctDNA analyses that were performed. So just to level set on the overall study design, so 30 patients with epithelioid or biphasic histology that were all deemed resectable by a multidisciplinary team were enrolled from 2019 through 2024. And then the results that were recently published in Nature Medicine were from a database lock in January earlier this year. Patients were assigned sequentially into one of two arms. So in arm A, patients received neoadjuvant nivolumab monotherapy. And then in arm B, they received a combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab, followed by nivolumab alone. Surgery was followed by optional adjuvant chemotherapy and or radiation, and then up to a year of adjuvant nivolumab. Primary endpoints were feasibility, so patients, you know, could get to and complete surgery on time, and safety, where dose-limiting toxicities were evaluated. And then through the study, we were also able to perform fairly extensive ctDNA analyses to be able to evaluate treatment response and disease progression.
Yeah, and major congratulations to you and the entire study team for that publication in Nature Medicine. You certainly deserve it. This was such an awesome study. So maybe for our listeners who are less familiar with this clinical space, let's talk a little bit about how we treat these patients clinically. What is mesothelioma? And, you know, it's notoriously very difficult to treat and even harder to monitor, which is why I think this trial was so unique. Historically, clinicians and oncologists, we've relied on chemo, surgery, sometimes even radiation. But unfortunately, even when we throw everything at these patients, sometimes outcomes have still remained fairly poor. And as used in this trial, immune checkpoint blockade has really shown promise in patients with unresectable disease. But we're still learning about its role with patients who are ultimately taken to surgery. Walk us through the rationale for testing neoadjuvant nivolumab alone versus the combination with ipilimumab.
Yeah, absolutely. So the rationale for the study really stemmed from the success of immune checkpoint blockade in patients with unresectable mesothelioma, particularly the combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab, which did demonstrate survival benefits from the CheckMate 743 study. But its role, to your point, in resectable disease had yet to be defined or investigated. So the clinical team from this trial wanted to really explore whether perioperative immunotherapy could be safely and feasibly integrated into the treatment of resectable diffuse pleural mesothelioma. And then by testing the nivolumab monotherapy and the combination sequentially, they could assess feasibility and safety prior to escalating to the dual checkpoint blockade.
And for this study design, you chose a non-randomized sequential design, which is a bit unique, I'd say, from what you normally see.
Yeah, exactly. So the investigators opted for the sequential design primarily to ensure patient safety. So there's been historically higher toxicity associated with dual checkpoint blockade. So they first evaluated nivolumab monotherapy alone. And then once feasibility and safety were confirmed, they were then able to proceed to the combination arm. So it was a way of balancing feasibility and safety while still able to demonstrate the potential added benefit of ipilimumab.
Thank you for that. And I want to turn a little bit to what I think is one of the most exciting aspects of this trial, and that's ctDNA and MRD. So in patients with mesothelioma, imaging is often unreliable, really, and this is due to that natural history of the way this tumor grows. It kind of creeps along the pleural space. We don't see big, measurable tumors like we do in other solid tumors that are really easy to follow on traditional radiology like CT scans and PET scans. So in this clinical trial, you relied on a tumor-informed liquid biopsy approach. So can you explain to our listeners who may be less familiar in the MRD space with this terminology, what does that actually mean in plain terms?
Yeah, sure. So we were particularly excited to be able to support the liquid biopsy analyses for this study. And so a tumor-informed liquid biopsy means we first sequence the patient's tumor and normal DNA to identify a specific set of mutations that are unique to their specific cancer. And then we look for those same mutations in the blood using ultrasensitive whole genome sequencing, which is then combined with a machine learning algorithm. And so this strategy, you know, where you have an a priori understanding of which alterations to assess from the tumor, allows us to really detect even very tiny amounts of circulating tumor DNA, essentially giving us a molecular fingerprint of the residual disease that imaging potentially could miss.
That's fascinating. And you make this sound really easy, which is why I love listening to you explain this, but I know it's never that easy. What are some of the biggest technical challenges in detecting ctDNA in patients with mesothelioma?
Yeah, and I think you highlighted you know, some of those already. So mesothelioma has a low mutational burden. So even with these integrated whole genome sequencing analyses, there's still a relatively low number of alterations to evaluate compared to other tumor types which have relatively high mutational burden. And then as you pointed out earlier, mesothelioma tends to grow locally rather than spread systemically through the bloodstream, which then makes ctDNA detection particularly challenging where sampling the bloodstream in order to be able to identify residual disease. And so to overcome this, we utilized a whole genome sequencing strategy, which again is combined with a machine learning model to suppress background errors and then enhance sensitivity while we maintain high specificity. And to give you some sense for how low we can detect ctDNA with this type of strategy, we can detect disease with 95% confidence as low as 0.005% tumor content or 50 parts per million, which is critical in patients with early stage or resectable disease.
Yeah, that's really tiny amounts that you're detecting. So let's dive into the results. I think that's certainly the heart and the meat of the study. Walk us through them. Did ctDNA levels correlate with the outcomes like recurrence or progression for these patients?
Yeah, so briefly they did. And so what was interesting to see was that patients that had detectable ctDNA at key time points, especially later during neoadjuvant treatment, so after they've received a few cycles of therapy, and then pre-surgery, had significantly shorter progression-free survival. Conversely, those patients who were able to clear circulating tumor DNA had a significant reduction, say 95% during neoadjuvant therapy, those patients tended to have much longer progression-free survival. And so this molecular signal often preceded radiographic evidence of progression, which we then were able to demonstrate the potential as an early biomarker given the relatively short half-life of only about 1 to 2 hours. And so it was interesting to see that patients who cleared ctDNA during neoadjuvant therapy were also then more likely to go on to complete surgery.
And that's so powerful. I'm thinking about this from a surgical perspective and from an oncologist perspective. I had the opportunity to dive into this paper. And if I remember correctly, some of the patients were actually classified as having stable disease by imaging, right?
Exactly. And that was one of the more striking findings, is that several patients had stable disease by imaging, but persistent ctDNA during neoadjuvant therapy. And those patients experienced early progression. But there was a subgroup of patients who cleared ctDNA after 1 or 2 cycles of neoadjuvant therapy were considered RECIST stable disease, but then went on to achieve fairly long progression-free survival, which I think to your earlier points highlights some of the limitations of radiographic assessments in mesothelioma and the value of molecular monitoring as well.
And the way I think about that is, you know, ctDNA is perhaps giving us a more honest picture, if I can use that word, of what could be happening biologically.
Exactly. And I think that's where we look to see the value of ctDNA-based dynamics is to complement radiographic assessments, not necessarily to replace those, but by providing another snapshot of what's happening to the biology of that tumor, either during treatment as an estimate of response or from a surveillance standpoint.
Now, from a very practical clinical operations and workflow standpoint, implementing this kind of assay across multiple centers is no small feat. So major kudos to you and the study team. Clue us in about how successful your team was in generating informative ctDNA profiles for this entire patient cohort.
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, while the results are fairly striking and exciting to see how they correlate with radiographic data, disease progression status, it's only helpful if you can actually generate the findings. And so for this study, we actually achieved a success rate of 93% in generating informative ctDNA assays across the cohort. And that's really quite high, given the technical complexity of the integrated approach across the multiple different sample types and the multi-center nature of the study. So it really speaks to the robustness of the platform and then scalability, you know, beyond a clinical trial setting.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you an unfair question, which requires you to look into your crystal ball that I know you have. Do you see ctDNA being used prospectively to guide treatment decisions in patients with mesothelioma or other cancers at some point in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, ctDNA, you know, really has the potential to guide decisions in a variety of clinical contexts. You could think about adjuvant therapy, identification of patients who may experience early recurrence, and then even stratification of patients for clinical trials. I think this clinical study provided a nice data set from which interventional studies could be designed to then, you know, really demonstrate clinical utility associated with intervention of MRD-based decision-making. And I think in mesothelioma, where imaging is often challenging, ctDNA could become a critical tool to help to complement the information that's being utilized to inform personalized treatment planning.
Yeah, I love it when you kind of speak to that. So I think I'm very optimistic about this evolving and really being able to treat more patients. But what about expanding this approach to other, even more rare histologic subtypes like sarcomatoid mesothelioma, for example?
Yeah, that's a great question. So patients with sarcomatoid histology were excluded because standard practice for patients at that time did not include surgery during the enrollment phase. But there are now ongoing trials exploring neoadjuvant immune checkpoint blockade in patients with sarcomatoid histology. And so I think ctDNA could play a critical role there as well.
I think this trial really highlights for me as I was reviewing it, the potential of integrating really novel molecular tools into perioperative care. What is it that you want clinicians and oncologists and surgeons to take away from this study?
Yeah, great question. I think at the end of the day, I hope clinicians see the feasibility of integrating immunotherapy into the perioperative setting for mesothelioma, and then recognize the value of ctDNA as a complementary tool to imaging. I think this study highlights nicely how molecular monitoring can provide actionable insights that have the potential to improve patient management.
Okay. And if you had to pick one innovation from this trial that you think could really change practice, what would it be?
Yeah, you know, that's the big question. And I think from a clinical perspective, you know, the study was powered to evaluate the safety and feasibility of perioperative immune checkpoint blockade. So it wasn't sufficiently powered to evaluate efficacy. So I think there is a significant amount of novelty in the underlying study design. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, not ready to change clinical practice. So these findings were exploratory. But I think it was clear that the use of an ultra-sensitive tumor-informed ctDNA platform could be used to detect residual disease and assess treatment response and recurrence risk in tumors like mesothelioma, where traditional imaging can fall short.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Mark. I know I always learn something from you every single time that we talk, and this has been such a fascinating conversation. I hope it certainly sparks more dialogue about how we can bring tools like MRD assays like this one and others into the clinic and to the hands of oncologists who have to make these real-world decisions for patients. I'd like to thank our listeners, and we'll hope you join us next time on LabCorp Perspectives Oncology.